Yeah. 忘ればや。
煩悩まぐわて忘ればや。
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya。
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya。
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya。 Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4 Chapter 12 Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead。Text 11. Sarvatmanyachute sarve.
Sarvatmanyachute sarve.
Tivraugham bhaktim udvahan.
Tivraugham bhaktim udvahan。
Dadarshatmani
bhuteshu Dadarshatmani bhuteshu
Tamevavasthitam vibhum
Tamevavasthitam vibhum
Sarvatmanyachute sarve
Sarvatmanyachute sarve
Tivraugham bhaktim udvahan
Tivraugham
Tadarshatmani bhuteshu
Tadarshatmani bhuteshu
Tamevavasthitam vibhum
Tamevavasthitam vibhum
Sarvatmanyachute sarve
Sarvatmanyachute sarve
Divraugham bhaktim udvahan
Divraugham bhaktim udvahan
Dadarshatmani bhuteshu
Dadarshatmani bhuteshu
Tamevavasthitam vibhum
Tamevavasthitam vibhum Sarvatmanyachute chute sarve
Sarvatmanyachute sarve
Divraugham bhaktim udvahan
Divraugham bhaktim Tim udhavahan
Tadarshatmani bhuteshu
Tadarshatmani bhuteshu
Tamevavasthitam vibhum
Tamevavasthitam vibhum Sarvaatmani
Sarvaatmani
Unto the Super Soul
Achyute
Achyute Infallible
Infallible
Asarve
Asarve
Without any limit Tivra ogham
Tivra ogham
With unrelenting force
Bhaktim
Devotional service
Udvahan
Rendering Didarsha
Didarsha
He saw
Atmani
Atmani In the Supreme Spirit
Bhuteshu
In all living entities
Tam
Him
Eva
Only Avasthitam
Situated
Vibhum
All-powerful
Translation Dhruva Maharaj rendered devotional service unto the Supreme, the reservoir of everything, with unrelenting force. While carrying out his devotional service to the Lord, he could see that everything is situated in him only, and that he is situated in all living entities. The Lord is called Achyuta, because he never fails in his prime duty to give protection to his devotees. The image of the Lord as a reservoir and Dhruva Maharaj's bhakti as an unrelenting force may remind us of the rivers rushing into the ocean. The Lord is capable of receiving everyone's devotion. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. not only did Dhruva Maharaj perform many sacrifices, but he carried on his transcendental occupation of engagement in devotional service of the Lord. The ordinary karmis who want to enjoy the results of fruitive activities are concerned only with sacrifices and ritualistic ceremonies as enjoined in the Vedic Shastras. Although Dhruva Maharaj performed many sacrifices in order to be an exemplary king, he was constantly engaged in devotional service. The Lord always protects his surrendered devotee. A devotee can see that the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesha Arjuna Tishtati. Ordinary persons cannot understand how the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, but a devotee can actually see him. Not only can the devotee see him outwardly, but he can see with spiritual vision that everything is resting in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as described in Bhagavad Gita, Matsthani Sarva Bhutani. That is the vision of a Mahabhagavata. He sees everything others see, but instead of seeing merely the trees, the mountains, the cities, or the sky, he sees only his worshipable Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything, because everything is resting in him only. This is the vision of the Mahabhagavata. In summary, a highly elevated pure devotee sees the Lord everywhere, as well as within the heart of everyone. This is possible for devotees who have developed elevated devotional service to the Lord. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 538, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, only those who have smeared their eyes with the ointment of the love of Godhead can see everywhere the Supreme Lord face to face. It is not possible by imagination or so-called meditation. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manogishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rup Kadamakyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapara Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadhutam Arijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sarvatmanya Chute Sarve Tivraugham Bhaktim Udvahan Dadarshat Mani Bhuteshu Tam Ivavasthitam Vipum. three distinct points are brought up in this translation that immediately come to my mind that I can see here. And one of them, the fact that devotees have divine vision, has been given a lot of attention. While carrying out his devotional service to the Lord, he could see that everything is situated in him only, and that he is situated in all living entities. So that's everything. All the objects and all the entities are within Krishna, and therefore he can see Krishna everywhere due to his devotional service. Srila Madhvacharya has commented that the Lord has one characteristic which no one else has, and that he possesses within himself diversity, whereas everyone else is a discrete entity who is part and parcel of him. But he possesses diversity as a characteristic, or as a quality of his very self. No one else has that. This is just another way of saying that Krishna has diverse energies, and he's using these energies to manifest all the material and spiritual worlds. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. He is manifesting three types of energy broadly: inferior, which is matter; superior, which is the spiritual world and all the residents there; and marginal, which are those souls like us who have an option of whether to be influenced by the inferior or by the superior energy. Which one we choose determines which qualities we take on. But our position is tatashta shakti. It is marginal. Or, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur puts it, borderland potency. Like on a beach, there's sand, which is sometimes swept into the ocean and becomes silt, and is sometimes thrown up onto the earth and becomes loam. And also, another point about this all-pervasiveness of Krishna is there in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, text 48. Naveda yagya jaya nair nadanair nacha kriyabhir naptapo bhir ugrai evam rupa shakya aham nirloke drashtum tvaranyena kuru pravira. O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen this universal form of mine. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penances can I be seen in this form in the material world. So here, Krishna has just given Arjuna divine vision by which he can perceive the universal form of the Lord. And that's through bhakti. Specifically, it requires the mercy of Krishna whether or not we will see that form. But it's not possible by studying the Vedas, sacrifices and so on, as mentioned in this verse. So many demons were there who were present when Krishna was there on the planet. Shishupal, Jarasandha, Kamsa. They all saw Krishna, but none of them saw Krishna as he is, because they did not have bhakti. when Krishna was fighting, for example, in the wrestling match with Mushtika and I can't remember the other wrestler's name, but the elephant was Chanura. Thank you, Chanura. And the giant elephant, Kuvalayapid. The people in the audience, included great sages, also the residents of Vrindavan were there, and everyone was seeing Krishna differently. The yogis saw Krishna as the super soul. The gopis were seeing Krishna as the most charming cowherd boy lover, and Mother Yashoda was seeing him as her delicate, fragile little boy who's fighting against these gargantuan professional wrestlers. And the cowherd boys were thinking Krishna will beat this guy up with no problem. And Kamsa simply saw death when he looked at Krishna. So everyone had a different vision of Krishna because of their different states of consciousness. A devotee sees Krishna as he is by a dint of bhakti. And that's Krishna's special mercy. This verse, which we quoted from Bhagavad Gita, though, it's talking about the universal form, which is a little different than seeing Krishna everywhere by his internal potency, because the universal form is actually a temporary material manifestation, the Virat Rupa. It doesn't exist in the spiritual world. So if even to see that Virat Rupa, one can't, one needs bhakti and the blessings of Krishna, then what to speak of seeing Krishna's true spiritual form, which is also all pervasive. That must take so much mercy. It's not a cheap thing. And in the 518 also, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavihastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapake Pakicha Vandita Samadarshina. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, an outcast. So we've discussed how by that vision you can see Krishna everywhere in everything. Now it's specifically demonstrating that that vision does not obliterate our understanding of the individual nature of other entities and other energies of the Lord. Because this means that when I see a tree, I'm seeing the material body, I'm seeing the spirit soul, and understanding that both of them are Krishna's energy. It's not that this world is false, it's just temporary. So we're seeing this material energy, but as a part of Krishna's energy. We're, well, I say we're, but that's presumptuous. The pure devotees are seeing like that. It's not that everything becomes like a merely like a painting of Krishna everywhere, and they can't drive down the road anymore. Sometimes we confuse spiritual vision with LSD vision. It's actually not the same thing. But they're able to simultaneously see Krishna in the heart and in the external world. This is something that can't be fully understood until you experience it. But we're given plenty of Shastric reference to explain the phenomena. And we have some experience also of seeing how the great souls are able to see Krishna in everything. We can understand their ability to see Krishna in everything by their ability to relate everything to Krishna on the spot with practically no thinking time. Someone was talking about the sunrise to Prabhupada. They were saying, "It's such a beautiful sunrise, Swamiji. Did you see it?" Prabhupada said, you should have seen the artist who made it. So he's just immediately understanding Krishna is everywhere. It's not like theoretical. He's experiencing Krishna's mercy. That's a very exalted state, and we can look at it as a point of inspiration to keep us going. That one day we will also see Krishna by the mercy of the Lord. And in the meantime, we have deity worship also, which helps us to remember Krishna by seeing him physically. Out of his causeless mercy, he expands here in this material world in two forms, which are not present in the spiritual world, just for our benefit. One is the deity form, and the other is, as we mentioned, the Virat Rupa, the universal form of the Lord. But the benefit of that is that we are able to come to the platform of real vision of Krishna everywhere. Those two types of service, the deity worship and realization of Virat Rupa, are meant to elevate our consciousness out of this material world. 1332 Bhagavad Gita, Anaditvan Nirgunatvat Paramatmayam Avyaya Shariro Pikantaya Nakaroti Nalipyate. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. Get that Atma Darshan. We can see the spiritual nature within ourself, within others, and see on the material side how the modes of nature are acting and causing others to act. Although people like to claim that I'm the doer, that's an illusion. First of all, they think I'm the body. That's the illusion. And based on that, they think my body's doing this and that, but they think that's me. The body is doing it as an instrument in the hands of the material energy. And because we're volunteering to identify with this body and play the game of assuming this material identity, then Krishna facilitates our ability to continue playing this game. He just wants to see us happy. We think we're going to be happy this way. And so he's letting us figure out that actually he knows what will make us happy better than we. That's the nature of this world. It's meant to bring us to the point of Krishna consciousness again, so we can never leave Krishna again. He misses us. Each person has a unique relationship with Krishna, and he's missing that taste, that rasa. He can't get it from other people. Each one is unique. So, otherwise, here we're all trying to be, we're trying to fit the same picture. I'm trying to have the most money, somebody else is also trying to have the most money. I'm trying to eat the nicest food, someone else wants to eat the nicest food. I want the most attractive opposite sex member, someone else wants the same thing. It's stereotype and hackneyed. But in the spiritual world, each person has a unique relationship with Krishna, which cannot be copy-pasted. Prabhupada quoted this verse in his purport. He referenced Matsthani Sarvabhutani. This is from Bhagavad Gita 9.4. Maya tata idam sarvam jagaravyakta murtina Matsthani Sarvabhutani nachaham teshva vashtita. We had the same word of ashtita in today's shloka also in Bhagavatam. situation. Vastu. Vastu is us. It comes from astu. Astu is something is. Vastu is the existence of something, and vastita is its situation. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them. So Krishna is the substance upon which everything is resting. Nothing can exist without him. And no relationship can exist, can stand up without Krishna either. We may not remember sometimes that just as there are laws of physics which hold matter together via gravity, there are laws of love which hold relationships together via rasa, or taste. But the taste which is strong enough to hold everything together is adi-rasa, the relationship with Krishna. That can bind people forever. So it's not that by serving man you can serve God. Rather, it's the opposite. It's by serving God that you can serve anyone. Just as by watering the root of the tree, you can automatically nourish every leaf and branch. If you just try to water all the leaves of a tree and think in that way, I will serve the tree the best, it's impossible to water each leaf, and futile if you manage to do it somehow or other. Because the leaves will dry out from within. You'll have wet, dry leaves which start falling off. So devotional service to Krishna brings the highest benefit to everyone. This vision of God is not sectarian. There's only one God. It's not that there would be a Christian God, a Muslim God, and a Jewish God. So whichever God whichever name of God you use to worship him, that is what benefits people. So the persons of these so-called different religions, which is itself a false distinction, if they can cooperate to propagate Krishna consciousness, then people will be happy. There's enough people who are theists, we just have to cooperate. Everyone wants to be independent, though. This is the problem. This is a kind of a silly example, but it's useful. I remember seeing this years ago. There was a child's movie, and fish got trapped in a net, and they were all going here and there in different ways, and one smart fish got everybody to work together and push down, and they got out of the net like that. They broke the net, I think. And that's the idea, that we may be going in different energies. Our energies may be flayed out in different ways, but vyavasayatmika budhiye keha kuru nandana. With one pointed attention and great determination, that will maximize the effect. We need to work together, and that's what goes on in the spiritual world. Everyone is working together to serve Krishna. And not that everyone fights to try to serve Krishna himself, but they cooperate serving each other so that ultimately Radha can serve Krishna. Just as yesterday we were saying that the pujari may do an arti, but everyone who sees it gets equal benefit. It's not that everybody has to elbow their way onto the altar so they can swing the incense around and then that's the only way to get the real benefit. That kind of me first attitude is distinctly materialistic and it's not required in devotional service. So in the same way, in the spiritual world, not everyone has to directly worship Krishna. Everyone experiences the same love, and Krishna receives their love through the chain of service. Servant of the servant of the servant. Each person along that chain is pleasing Krishna perfectly. So Krishna's vision is absolute. There's two kinds of vision. There's absolute vision and relative vision. Relatively, people see everything differently and they want to put themselves on top. And they can't see Krishna because of that. But levels of absolute, then there's absolute vision, which is much more interesting and which will break down into three levels: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman vision is, we looked at it already, but let's look again at 518. That vision of Brahman is available to the humble sage who, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, an outcast. So that's all those things occur in the material world. We find dogs, elephants, dog eaters, cows, Brahmanas, and so on here in the material world. But even in the material world, someone who has this spiritual vision, he sees these people equally. This is a very primary or foundational level of spiritual vision, and it leads to respect. He respects everyone. He's not looking to get on top of any of them. Then Paramatma, we looked, but let's look again, 9.4. Paramatma vision is saying, by me and my unmanifest form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is Krishna revealed. This is the part I wanted to bring to our attention. Again, he's quoting this, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santas Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti. So in the heart, that Lord, the Lord is there in the heart, and he can be seen through bhakti. This is an interesting verse. It's a little anomalous because generally the Lord in the heart is Vishnu. We're explained that way, that it's Kshirodakshai Vishnu. But here this is an exceptional verse where Lord Brahma is saying it's Sham Sundar Krishna, Yung Sham Sundara Achintya Guna Swarupam. That Krishna is in the heart also. So that's a very advanced realization, which is a bridge then into the next level of absolute vision, the Bhagavan. Bhagavan realization is beautifully explained in that Bhagavan vision. It's explained in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam completely, and we have a nice point here in chapter 8. I'll just read a few verses from there. Chapter 8, text 39, 37 through 40. Saying, when Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, she saw within his mouth all the moving and non-moving entities, outer space in all directions, along with mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the blowing wind, fire, the moon, and the stars. She saw planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and creation by transformation of ahankara. She saw the senses, the mind, sense perception, and the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. She saw the time allotted for the living entities. She saw natural instinct and the reactions of karma. And she saw desires in different varieties of bodies, moving and non-moving. Seeing all these aspects of the cosmic manifestation, along with herself and Vrindavan Dham, she became doubtful and fearful of her son's nature. completely understandable reaction. And in 40, Mother Yashoda began to argue with herself. Is this a dream? Or is it an illusory creation by the external energy? Has this been manifested by my own intelligence, or is it some mystic power of my child? This is Bhagavan realization, because she's seeing everything. She's seeing the whole universe. She's seeing Krishna's energies completely with perfect understanding of each one. How could we see ahankara? How could we see the modes of material nature unless we're on the absolute platform? We're not qualified to see these things, but Mother Yashoda is seeing them perfectly. And yet, all she's seeing is Krishna. And so she's bewildered. In the beginning, we're bewildered with lust, because we're wanting something that we can't get. And in the background, there's always this death. Death is always coming, and we know it, but we try to forget about it, but we know it's coming. So there's bewilderment of this lust. I have to enjoy now before it's over. Then the next stage is this clear, peaceful stage of self-realization. This is Brahman platform, realization of spiritual nature. It's not changing, that I can't lose it because it's already here. Then, there's another bewilderment after that, but it's a transcendental bewilderment, not of lust, but of love. Love of Krishna. So we have to keep this trajectory in mind, that that's the healthy state of being transcendentally bewildered in love of Krishna. That's the healthy state. So right now we're diseased, we have this cataracts of lust going on over the eyes. So we need an ophthalmological checkup. That's provided by Bhagavad Gita. It's explaining, gives us diagnosis what your problem is. Lust is lodged in your senses, your mind, and your intelligence, Krishna says in the third chapter, that you need to slash this lust with the weapon of knowledge. And what is that knowledge? Oh, that's the rest of Bhagavad Gita. Then Bhagavatam gives us case studies and inspirational stories. Like you go to the cancer ward up on the top floors, and actually pretty much all in various areas of the hospital across the street, you'll find these little... Yesterday I was in there, and I saw these pamphlets that say, so you have cancer, things like that. Now what to do? So Bhagavatam is like, okay, so you're conditioned materially, conditioned soul. Don't worry, there were also persons in the past who have been afflicted like this, but they got free from all their suffering by devotional service to Krishna. And they were in much worse situations than you, like Prahlad Maharaj, who was being boiled in oil, thrown off mountains, had mountains thrown on top of him, elephants running across him, pierced by gungeons, different things. We can't imagine the pain that it would have caused for us. So it puts things in perspective, gives us case studies of the power of bhakti, inspirational stories of what happens when you apply those teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita ends with surrender to Krishna. Sarvadharman Prityaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. And Srimad Bhagavatam begins from that point. Now that you've surrendered to Krishna, here's what happens. That's the Bhagavatam. All the examples of what happens. And the prescription is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita for that premanjana, love of God. That gets Bhagavatam ends with the point of Sankirtan, that persons in this degraded age of Kali Yuga who have good brain substance, Sumedatha, they will engage in Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And Chaitanya Charitamrita begins with that, Sankirtan. And that is the means by which we can get that Premanjana and smear it on the eyes. But it's a curious eye unguent. Anjana means unguent. It's a curious unguent, because to get it on your eyes, you have to put it in your ears. Therefore, we're chanting the holy names of the Lord attentively. And that way, it goes into the eyes, from the ears, into the heart. And then we can see Krishna. We get that divine vision. This was a very exploded view of the topic, but it's very simple also. Simply chant, dance, and feast. That's the essence. All that's possible only in the association of devotees. Okay, would you like to share anything?
I was wondering, what should be the mind state, because we're encouraged to be the servant of the servant. And so how should what has to do when you have to address the deities in your personal service? What should be your mind state when you're doing those things? Because you're doing what? Direct service. And you're taking the position that should be relatively avoided, I guess.
What is the position that you think should be relatively avoided?
What should be your mind state when you're you're called upon to do those things.
Yes. Any service, whether it's deity worship, congregational development, or toilet scrubbing, should be done with 100% attention to detail. That's sufficient. We work on complete detail, detail-oriented, then from that attentiveness, there will come some interest. Like, oh, I'm doing this for Krishna, right? Then feeling will come. If we don't have feeling. If we already have feeling, then attentiveness with feeling. That's very perfect. There's perfect, more perfect, and then all perfection will grow from that attentive service. And ideally, if it can be done in a mood of separation, that I wish that I had more association with devotees, that I could be doing a service with them, that will accelerate it like anything. We always should aspire to be in the association of devotees and not think that I'm good enough by myself. Because we're not by ourselves. Actually, Krishna's there. There's countless living entities everywhere. We can't see them. But we should aspire for the association of the devotees. Attentiveness is a good start.
But should someone, if you're doing personal service for the deities or something, think like, you know, I'm only doing this because it's my duty. What I really want to do is service, to serve for the service of the Lord, or something like that. Or
no, you've been given a service. Somebody gave it to you. So by doing what the person told you, that's also servant to the servant. Somebody, my manager tells me, go, you're going to be going on the altar every day now. So when I do that, I'm thinking, I may not be thinking it, but it's a fact, nonetheless, that I'm serving his instruction. So that's also serving the servant. And all of us are serving Prabhupada by serving his kind. So that's a big time servant of the servant. Mahat Sevayo Vipra Punya Tirthani Shevana Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatmasudra. We get a taste for hearing Krishna Katha. We get a taste for Krishna consciousness by serving those devotees who are completely free from vice. Any service done in ISKCON done with the proper mood connects us to Prabhupada. That pleases Krishna. These pure devotees. So the answer of being attentive really applies to services here in this temple, for example, or in any ISKCON temple. That's it. All the prerequisites have been established already by Prabhupada. All we have to do is sort of plug in and be attentive. And then we get all the benefits of massive devotional background. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. Realizations just flow up apparently from nowhere, but then when we get some realization, oh, I see where all this is coming from. Found Acharya. Just like Krishna, he's everywhere. Prabhupada's all over ISKCON. So just as realizations come up within the heart, Tesham Shatata Yuktanam Pachatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yinamamupayantite. The Lord gives realization by which you can come to Him to those who have constantly devoted their lives in service to Him. So the same applies to us. If we, the process works if you work the process. Is that okay? Thank you. Thank you very much. Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam ki jai. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.